We have one more before lunch. Who's got that case? Hank, how long's the case, Hank, would you presume?
Well, Bull said he can do his in about 3 minutes, and I will try to do it under 10.
All right, the next item on the agenda, and then we'll be breaking for lunch for the fishery matters, is National Aeronautics and Space Administration, number 18-1590.
What I'll probably do is leave out a lot. So if you have questions, I think we've got enough people here to discuss it. NASA is requesting authorization to install two sets of three approximately 150-foot-long stone offshore breakwaters and place approximately 1.3 million cubic yards of sand beach nourishment material landward of a breakwater system along approximately 19,850 feet of shoreline situated along the Atlantic Ocean on and adjacent to Wallops Island. The sandy material will be mined from the north end of Wallops Island, where the original nourishment has accreted due to longshore transport. Both the coastal primary sand dune and beach and a submerged lands permit is required. Also, the project is protested by the Nature Conservancy. Quick look, Upper North Accomack County, red, Wallops Island. A little closer, red is the fee simple property of Wallops Island. The inlet goes down to what's remaining of Assawoman Inlet. A little closer view, again, fee simple is in red. Pipe and plovers habitat, this is back in 2008 and 9, is in this general area. And down here, loggerhead turtles were spotted in, this is 2008, and there's been a few since then, but not a lot. Closer view, just showing the spit of Assateague and Wallops, the mining area is in here, and the nourishment will be coming down in this general area. Closer view. This is an older photo, but it's fairly accurate. The only thing that I know that's been changed is this is now, instead of geotexal tubes, it's a stone revetment seawall. Nourishments will be coming from up here. The nourishment will be mined from up here and placed along this shoreline down here. The ocean has encroached towards the land, launch pads, infrastructure, and the test and training facilities belonging to NASA, the U.S. Navy, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Seaport, which is MARS, which is this landing right here. And MARS is currently in construction of new facilities on Wallops Island to support the launching of the orbital rockets that will carry payloads to the International Space Station, and this started last year. Another closer view, we issued a permit to NASA back in 2011 to extend their existing rock seawall and to place approximately 3,199 cubic yards of sand along their shoreline and extend their beach offshore to the east, approximately 240 feet beyond the seawall. The sand was dredged from offshore beyond the 3-mile limit, didn't need a permit from us. The original nourishment was done in 2012 and re-nourished in 2014 after Hurricane Sandy and other northeasters. Long-term erosion rate along Wallops Island and Assawoman Island is 14 to 17 feet. Here what you have is right after the nourishment was originally done, and then 3 months later after Hurricane Sandy, and you can see it's been pretty much deflated at that point. This is just showing in green where the nourishment's going. The three breakwaters there and three other breakwaters here are protecting the launch pad here and another facility in this general area here. One of the reasons we're here is Accomack County has not adopted the Coastal Primary Sand Dune Ordinance. As a result, the commission is responsible for administering the provisions of the ordinance within the locality. We do have one protest from the Nature Conservancy, who owns the closest island is Metomkin Island, which is approximately 4 miles southwest of Wallops Island. They recommend only renourishing the beach from deposits in the Atlantic Ocean as was originally permitted. They also believe that by not installing the stone breakwaters, the cost savings could be used to pay for the offshore sand dredging. And if breakwaters are permitted and constructed, a monitoring and data analysis plan should be required to determine their effectiveness and the extent downdrift impacts to both Assawoman Island and Assateague Island. What I have here is going to be a series of aerial photos starting in 2005 showing the excavation box or the mining box. As you can see, in 2005, the area that they plan on mining was in the Atlantic Ocean. Again, this is before the nourishment in 2011. The box or the long drift accretion has come and filled in half of this area, and that's in 2011. This is 2013 after Superstorm Sandy and the first nourishment. As you can see, it's back deflated and only about half. Again, 2016 is three quarters full, and this was after the 2014 nourishment. And this is 2017, possibly 18, and you can see the box where the mining will take place is completely full. This is the material that's going to come down here and nourish the rest. Just a close-up showing the three breakwaters. They'll be placed approximately 200 feet off of the high watermark of the new nourishment. Again, this is the launch pad southern end. Same thing, three breakwaters, 200 feet off of the proposed new high watermark. Just showing the low and high watermark as they exist today and potential nourishment in front of them. Okay, this is the just a survey. You can't see all this, so I'm just going to go over a little bit of it. It's a 200-acre excavation site. The average excavation depth will be 2.35. No excavation below mean low water. They will take a they will mine this area to approximately mean low water, and they'll probably grade it back. So it's mean low water is going to be the lowest point that they'll go, and everything else will be graded at an angle back towards the dune area. Just cross-section. Breakwaters are coming out 200 feet beyond the proposed high watermark. This is the revetment. The nourishment will go 130 feet channelward of the revetment to here, and they're proposing to put a 6-foot-high berm approximately 70 feet channelward of the revetment, and this area will be sprigged in with the appropriate grasses. This is just a plan view showing the three breakwaters. This is closer to 100 foot, and this is closer to 130 foot in lengths. The base of the cross-section here of the offshore breakwaters is approximately 50 feet, and they'll be put in 4 to 8 feet of water. The tops will be approximately mean 9 feet above mean low, or 7 feet approximately above mean sea level. Just a view looking from the north south, and this is the area that the area will be mined. There will be some impact to the vegetative wetlands, to the dune vegetation in this area. And at this point, I'll just go over some of the VIMS comments. VIMS states that the proposed project will significantly increase storm protection, especially directly leeward of the breakwaters, but is unlikely to provide the level of long-term protection necessary for the Wallops Island shoreline and upland infrastructure. However, there is potential for remote and secondary impacts to the marine resources dependent upon the proposed sand sources and the likelihood disruption of the longshore sand transport due to the influence of these breakwaters. VIMS recommends that consideration be given to alternative offshore sand nourishment. This would eliminate direct impacts to the beaches and dunes on northern Wallops Island and significantly decrease the likelihood of rapid geological alterations. VIMS concludes that some environmental effects could be addressed applying an additional number of breakwaters designed to contain all the sand nourishment and nourish the area to the maximum capacity. This would stabilize the shoreline to the maximum extent possible while providing additional protection for the Wallops Island shoreline. Until a full-blown, a full build-out scenario occurs, frequent and unknown degrees of impact to the natural shoreline and island processes should be expected. Just some other photos looking again south. Now we're down towards a little ways down. This is still all in the excavation area, mining area. Department of Game and Inland Fisheries states they cannot support the project. They have concerns that the mining of the sand from the north end of the island will impact federal endangered nesting piping plovers and American oyster catchers along with loggerhead sea turtles, and therefore cannot support the removal of the sand from the proposed north end borrow area. They would prefer, if the project moves forward, that the sand be collected from an area other than the north end of Wallops Island. And they further recommend a time of year restriction for sea turtles from April 1st through November 30th of any given year, or until the last sea turtle hatches. Again, this was taken in, I think it was November or December. As you can see, most of the nourishment is gone. Again, the launch pad is down beyond the water tower. And I'll leave this up as I go through my recommendation. As part of our review, staff required information related to the cost analysis for offshore dredging versus mining sand from the north end of Wallops Island. Based on this information, it appears that the total project, which includes sand nourishment and stone breakers, would cost approximately $27 million if the sand from the project was dredged from the offshore shoals. It would cost approximately $17 million if mined from the north end and trucked south. It is staff's understanding that NASA's budget constraints would prohibit the additional cost of an offshore source of sand, and at best, the construction would be delayed from 1 to 2 years. This would leave NASA, the Navy, and Virginia State Spaceport assets on Wallops Island vulnerable to storm events. Many of the states and federal agencies have expressed concerns that more modeling and analysis should be made to determine the long-term impacts of Wallops Island and the neighboring islands. However, staff is tasked with weighing the important or the environmental issues against the protection of a billion-dollar state and federal investment on Wallops Island. We could easily recommend that the nourishment come from offshore, as BMRC, TNC, and Game and Inland Fish have recommended, and without any breakwaters, as was originally permitted in 2011. We concur that using an offshore source of sand would be preferable. However, this would most likely leave the island and facilities susceptible to damage, since there appears to be no money in the NASA budget or the offshore dredging options. The applicant has agreed to the monitoring as stated in the original final environmental impact statement. This includes the monitoring of threatened and endangered species and conducting post-construction beach profile monitoring surveys. Therefore, after evaluating the merits of the project and after considering all the factors contained in 28.2.1403 and 28.2.1205A of the code, we're recommending approval of the project as submitted, conditioned on notification of the commencement and conclusions of each phase of the project activity submitted for all post and submittal of all post-construction beach profile monitoring surveys. Staff also recommends that Chapter 5 of the original final environmental impact statement, this is for the mitigation and the monitoring, pages 365 through 378, be made part of the permit. This includes the monitoring of threatened and endangered species, and this is piping plovers and sea turtles, and conducting post-construction beach profile monitoring surveys. Staff further recommends a time of year restriction for the mining of the sand and beach nourishment to avoid avian and sea turtle nesting seasons. I have April 1st, and that really should be March 15th, and that is in the actual monitoring, mitigation and monitoring plan that will be part of the record, pages 365 through 378. And again, March 15th through November 30th of any year, or until the last turtle hatches or the nest has been determined to have failed. And finally, with an ongoing monitoring and data analysis, staff would recommend that a long-term management plan be provided as part of any future permit application prior to an additional nourishment needs. I don't know if I made my 10 minutes, but that's about as close as I can get.
So, complicated project, so it's not something we rush through. Don't need to. Any questions of Mr. Badger by members of staff? Mr. Ballard.
Did I see on a slide that the mining area was approximately 2 or 3 acres?
200 acres.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Oh, by the way, just for giggles, 1969, how it looked.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Everett.
So the gap is $10 million for offshore versus north end.
That's the information they provided, yes.
Okay, and that has been requested or investigated, but it's definitely not available due to cuts. I mean, I guess my thought is, has NASA explored the ability, maybe working with the Navy, to find those funds, or is it just, it's been explored to...
Mr. Bull is here, and I'm sure he'll tell you that, that they've explored it.
Further questions? All right, thank you, sir. Is the applicant present or represented?
My understanding is that's the same as what the PowerPoint is. Let's see where it is.
It is. Sir, could you state your name? Raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and none but the truth, self you God? Thank you, sir. State your name, please.
My name is Paul Bull. I'm the Deputy Division Chief for Facilities for Goddard Space Flight Facility.
Welcome.
Thanks for squeezing us in before lunch. All right, so I have a lot of information that Mr. Badger shared, but I'll improve on some of his information. Give you some updates. So what we do at Wallace Flight Facility is launch rockets on the island, particularly. We support NASA missions, DOD missions, and the state of Virginia supports missions through commercial resupply through their Pad 0A and Pad 0B complexes, which I'll give you a better shot of those. Mr. Badger spoke real quickly about what's invested at Wallops Island. I'll give you a little more information on that. So current investments at Wallops Island, infrastructure-wise, NASA, we have about $194 million invested at Wallops Island. That's just infrastructure. The Navy has $75 million plus $800 million in outfitting of their facilities on the island. Virginia Commercial Space Flight Authority has $124 million currently invested. Talked to Dale Nash, who's executive director of Virginia Space, and he said that's not accurate. As of today, they're building on the northern end of our island, they're building a integration facility right now. It's valued at $20 plus million. We support annually about $46 million in NASA programs, $50 million in Navy programs, and a $1.9 billion program to carry cargo to the International Space Station through Virginia Space. Won't bore you with some of these details. Like Mr. Badger mentioned, we put 3.2 million cubic yards of sand on the beach in 12, and right after that, I think it was about a month and a half after that, Hurricane Sandy hit. We got a little money from the federal government to repair some of that. In 14, that's the last time we did nourishment. Spoke a little bit about monitoring. Monitoring was part of our permit when we got the original project in 2012. This depicts all the transects we've been doing throughout this time period. There's information here I could cover, but for expediency, I'll just move on. The results of our monitoring basically have shown that we have erosion rates, two different erosion rates that we found. Subreach 2, which is on the south, has about 192,000 cubic yards per year, and to the north, middle of our island, we have about 261 million cubic yards. This is our current condition. This is actually from September of this year, what the island looks like today. See the significant loss of sand in front of our seawall. This is the image that Mr. Badger also shared. This is what the area we intend on nourishing, 19,400 feet, and depicts the two sets of breakwaters. Also, an image that Mr. Badger showed, this is what we intend to borrow from, this area here to the north. This arrow, you can't read that well, but this depicts where the 2005 shoreline was. So as you can tell, accretion of sand has really been happening at a rapid rate to the north of our island. Breakwaters, he went into those pretty well. I will tell you what they are going to protect is the spaceports, Launch Complex 0A and B, and the horizontal integration facility. That's where we integrate rockets that go to the space station. We've done quite a bit of modeling through the Army Corps of Engineers, who's here as well to speak to this if we need to. Model shows that Northern Shoreline will recover in 24 months. After we mine that sand 24 months later, it will look just like it does today. Just a little bit more information about the cost impacts of breakwaters. We expect to be $2 to $4 million. Our mining of sand from the Northern Island would be about 15. If we had to go out on the shoal like we've done previously, we expect to pay at least $27 million to do that, which makes the profit the project not economically viable for us at this time. This is just citing some of the coordination issues we've been working with. And just to highlight a question, not a question, but a comment that Mr. Badger made earlier, time of year restrictions and federal species we fully are compliant with. We would just like to add that we haven't had nesting turtles since 2013. And we'd like to make sure that whatever permit we potentially would obtain would suggest that we would begin mining of sand after we last see turtles or birds foraging. All right, that's as quick as I could do it. Questions?
Questions? Mr. Tankard?
So the amount of money that you have spent so far is $1.2 billion is what you're kind of saying.
That's the assets on the island. We've spent, from nursing the beach, we had a project in 2012 that was about $42.9 million and about $11 million in 2014.
So thus my follow-up question, if I could, is how do you determine that the extra 10 for the dredging that some of the protestants would advocate is not feasible? It would seem to me that it's like not putting a roof on a pretty expensive house.
Sure, exactly. So I'll give you a little insight into how NASA does things. NASA has about $150 million that they dole out to the 10 centers. NASA Goddard Space Flight Facility is one of the 10, so every year we compete for that money. WALPS is a subset of Goddard Space Flight Facility. We were very fortunate to get this money at this time. Again, there's 10 other centers that have needs as strong as ours. Ours, we have needs for new facilities, but we're spending most of our money now on infrastructure just to keep WALPS viable. So it's a matter of competing for the money, and it's just not enough to go around for the 10 centers that we have.
Okay. Mr. Ballard?
As sort of a tack on to Mr. Tankard's question, but you seem to be perpetually dumping sand here, and it perpetually goes away. Have there been other considerations for longer-term fixes that we might not be here in 4 years from now, having to mine sand again?
Well, I'll speak a little bit about that. So in 2010 or so, when we came here to the commission to get the original permit, we talked about the need to have to renourish. Our modeling suggested a need to renourish every 5 to 7 years. That was exacerbated by this Hurricane Sandy, which really blew up our beach prematurely, which can happen in any given year, obviously. So we certainly recognize the need for doing something to this beach on a long-term basis. Right now, we're still in the situation we are with putting sand on the beach every 5 to 7 years. These breakwaters are an attempt to begin the process of understanding how they will affect long-term protection of our shoreline. There's similar, we don't have a picture of it, but I'm sure you can, local community knows this. Fort Story has, of course, that's more in the bay. I guess some of it's an ocean. And they have what's called tumbolos that form behind that and actually bring sand to the actual groin itself, not groin, breakwater. So we're expecting those to be very informational for us going forward. But right now, yes, you're right. We don't see an end in sight of putting sand on the beach.
Tumbolos have been used for a long time. I remember, I think the first ones we permitted were on the James River, up around Day's Point, and they've been there ever since. And that's been 20-some years ago, and they certainly work well. They don't go away, and they do what they're supposed to do. Further questions? You know, I feel your pain as far as having to compete for funds because as a state agency, we do the same thing. But to Mr. Taggart's point, a $1.2 billion operation that is critical to our space mission, that you have to compete with something that is so important as far as maintaining that to the tune of $10 million, something's wrong with that equation.
You're preaching to the choir.
And the other side of the coin is I'm very supportive of the space program. Nobody's any more than red, white, and blue. I don't think that I am. But it's almost at this juncture that when we have a permit request like this that comes to the commission, it's almost tantamount, and I don't mean to overemphasize it, like having a gun to your head, that if you don't do it, you're not supportive of the space station and the infrastructure that's there. As chair, and we won't have a tie vote today, I don't think, unless somebody abstains, but I hope you come back the next time with a different program and a different plan, because this, as Mr. Ballard was saying, this over and over and over again of placing sand that continues to go away when there are obviously in this United States of America with the great engineers we have other methods to take care of this problem. I think you're throwing good money after bad, but that's an opinion. Everybody's got one. Is there anyone else? Anything else?
I have some staff here, but I don't think anybody. I think unless you have questions that I can't answer.
Ms. Everett?
At the appropriate time, I'd like to hear from them based on the staff recommendation. If there's any further.
Okay. We'll see what's. Take them at your. I'll work it in there. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Anyone else in support of this project? Anyone in opposition to this project? We've received the comments from TNC. Okay. At this time, Vims is up. Mr. Barnell.
Bob Barnell with Vims. I also have with me Mr. Scott Hardaway, who's been dealing with these issues for
previously sworn,
and Ms. Emily Hine, who has expertise in barrier islands and is currently involved in conducting studies on the barrier islands.
Ms. Everett, did you have a question, ma'am?
I think just based on the situation with funding and staff recommendation to pull from the northern portion, is there still a strong objection or proposition to go offshore, or in this case, is it considered more practicable? So, but are there other things that can be done to, you know, mitigate any damage?
I guess I would take an exception to the term objection, because we don't really object. As VIMS, we make recommendations for you all to decide, and especially for the staff to develop their evaluation based on not just the scientific portion of this, but all other aspects. As you've heard, the economics today, was a large portion of that. So our report, this was a very complex, even if there wasn't any man-induced manipulation out there, this would be difficult to predict what's going on out there. So this was a difficult review for us to do, because we had to extract what might occur naturally versus what might occur if the project goes forward as projected or as proposed. So hopefully our comments were as clear as they could be in this situation from that. And as we state, you know, we recommend going a little farther than actually is in this application to protect the island out there. That's part of what we do. Our concerns from that perspective are, as you say, you keep adding sand. This is it's a sand starved system out there, as we could elaborate on if necessary. But that can cause a lot of problems when you inject sand into the system out there. So if it was contained, it would be a little bit easier to know what's going on and have everything equilibrate around that, but that's not the case in this situation.
Further questions?
I hope I answered your question as well.
Ballard has a question.
Yes.
Has NASA or the facility asked y'all's guidance? Have you visited the site and tried to suggest some of these alternatives to them?
Yes, we visited the site with the agents and NASA representatives. We discussed everything on site, and actually their monitoring data were very important to our review. It cleared up a lot of things. So yes, we've been, as we normally do on these large, very complex projects, we interact with the agent and the applicant as much as we can.
Ms. Everett?
So the source of the donor sand won't necessarily affect the island, but the you've asked NASA potentially to protect more of the island. Is that correct? I guess my question is, besides asking them to spend $10 million more and get the donor sand from offshore, are there other specific things that could do to be more protective, for example, of that island?
Well, I would almost defer to some others on that about how to approach. We would have gone a little farther in a little different design, I would suspect. But as for the sand, yes, that is the sand that was there, and that's a very unnatural movement and a very large chunk of sand that wasn't going to be there unless it was placed there previously. That's one option. The option of, as we hopefully are semi-clear on as much as we can be, bringing it from offshore would be much less disruptive to the island itself and to potentially adjacent islands and to Chincoteague Inlet.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard?
You know, when we look at this island and you see the riprap and we put sand up against it, it seems like that the ocean is pushing that sand off because of the riprap. It's like wind, a Venturi effect in a way. Is that what we're seeing here as well? I mean, we're really not doing anything about that.
Well, sand is going to move out there.
Sure.
And I'd maybe call on Mr. Hardaway to answer how the revetments and sand interact. It's pretty dynamic. But we have history's a judge. Yes, that sand is going to move from when you put it there no matter what. Whether that riprap, I could, Mr. Hardaway, elaborate on that?
Maybe, maybe not. Or maybe you already answered the question. Who knows? I know him better than that. Good to have you here, sir. Yes, sir.
So I'm going to address that question about the riprap. Historically, though, in context, that island has been, they've thrown everything at the ocean. They've thrown groins and they've thrown rocks. Rocks sink, they throw more rocks. And that, indeed, becomes a reflective surface. And it's not a bulkhead, although they've had bulkheads, which is a pure reflective surface. The rock does attenuate some wave action, but it is somewhat of, but it is a hard surface. And so, and rebuilding that for your final line of defense made perfect sense. Bringing the sand in made even more sense. I think this was before the commission before, and there's concerns about which way it's going and what it'll do. The reality is Mother Nature showed us what she's all about when she moved that material and which way she moved it. In order to establish this beach as a protector during storm events, reduce scour against the revetment, offshore structures are the logical answer. We think two might be too little, but that's we're not engineers. Play them on TV, but we think that one can look at more structures to contain a certain amount of sand that's the minimum that they considered required for shore protection against the shore. And I think they've already shown that. Their breakwater analysis shows a whole string of breakwaters along there. But they, because of budget constraints, they wanted to concentrate on the two areas that they felt they could afford, but they also wanted to bring that sand back, basically recycle it. Recycling sand is not new. Willoughby Spit, Norfolk did it for years, putting it back up there. And finally, guess what they did? Built breakwaters. As far as Fort Story is concerned, that is basically an ocean system, but it's being fed by beach fill from the resort strip. Other than that, there's only two other breakwater systems on the East Coast, one up in Massachusetts, which sits in sort of a curvilinear embayment. That's about 2,000 feet of shoreline. They have to nourish it occasionally. That's been there 30-plus years, doing a good job. And then off of Miami Beach, there's another three structures, and they do that in conjunction with beach fill. Hampton does the same thing. So the methodology, I think, is solid. Each site is different. They're going to monitor it, which looking at their monitoring data is very good. It tells you pretty much what's happened. The sand kind of moved north. And so the question, I think, we agree and we encourage the use of offshore breakwaters to create tombolos and stable pocket systems. But it's a long stretch of shoreline, and breakwaters, they can kind of get lost in the mix. The bigger, the better. So I think that we are in support of that aspect of it. I think the question becomes from the habitat perspective of recycling that sand off the north end. I think that seems to be the most controversial part of this project.
Further questions? Dr. Neal.
I guess yours is the best expert we've got. I guess that's kind of what I've been told.
He is.
Okay, and what I'm getting, I don't ever want to tell NASA no. That's just not something that just goes against my grain. But then I've got comments from these other very respected organizations and agencies that are all saying that don't do this. Take the sand from the offshore shoal. Don't take from the north end of the island. And so then that gives me pause. That gives me a real problem in making my decision, because I'm not an expert on the sand movement, and I'm not an expert on space flight. I do have a son that's an aerospace engineer, but that's not me.
Holiday and Express might have helped.
It's not a recommendation to go offshore. So, I mean, but it needs sand back where it was. I mean, one way or the other.
Mr. Ballard and Ms. Lusk. excuse me.
From what I understand, most of the objections to the recycling of the sand onshore is from the Nature Conservancy. Do you have any concerns that relate to sand migration and whether destabilizing that area by dredging it is going to have other impacts beyond what might be the normal Nature Conservancy concerns?
I think there's a habitat consideration from a geomorphic consideration. The way they're going to do it, I mean, there's going to be adjustments within the system. If they're going to mine down, that shoreline is not going to look like that too long. So you take this sand and you put it down where it was or where you want it. And so that area is going to adjust to some degree. I'm not exactly sure the specifics of it, but it'll, the sand will find its own home in there. And so that'll be part of that. There was some talk about impacts of Chincoteague Inlet. The monitoring data doesn't really show that material that was put out there getting into the inlet, per se, in that particular section up near the throat. It actually showed it coming around from the ocean side, around Fishing Point, and getting into it. So that was sort of interesting. So, I mean, there's going to be impacts. I think we would recommend some kind of this, and they have recommended an adaptive management strategy. We want to put this material in. We want to, and I would also strongly encourage a longer-term management plan where they want to go next with the next structure or with the next sand. But some of the information to date shows pretty strongly what the sand has done and what it'll probably do in the future as far as transportation along the shoreline.
Yeah, You've come in? Okay. Right there. Well, yes, ma'am.
To respond to Mr. Ballard, the suggestion for nourishment to come offshore, I believe, is also from the VIMS recommendation and TGIF as well. Thank you.
Brother. Thank you, Mr. Hardaway. Well, as I said before, it's kind of hard not to re-nourish and protect such a valuable asset, but somebody's got to come up with a better idea somehow, some way. I'm concerned with the concerns that are laid out by our advisors, and I'll just leave it at that. Matters before the commission. Mr. Ballard?
Certainly difficult, and I agree with your sentiments that would like to see a longer-term plan. At the same time, the issue before us seems to be where the sand comes from. I agree with some of the comments that it's only an additional $10 million to protect a $1.2 billion facility. At the same time, I think the more appropriate way to look at it would be the cost given the funds you have, not the funds you've previously spent. And an additional $10 million could triple the amount of breakwaters that they could put in, which would be a more longer-term solution. So I don't think it's appropriate to say it's only an additional $10 million for a $1.2 billion spaceport. And I would be inclined to agree with the staff recommendation.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion, yes.
Motion made by Mr. Ballard to accept staff recommendation. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Minor. Further discussion? Mr. Tankard?
Yes, I mean, I hear what Mr. Ballard is saying there, and I think we're applying a short-term solution for a long-term problem. I hope that we can work on a long-term solution here. I think that we'll see a similar outcome that we've seen in the past. So I hate to see us waste our money at the same time. The taxpayer doesn't come by this money for free, and I do think it will be right back here again. This is not a Band-Aid solution, but I, at this point, don't see any alternative.
Further discussion? Mr. Bull, I'm going to vote for the project, but where'd you have? Where are you? There you are. I'm going to vote for the project, but I wish that you would send a very strong message to your superiors that we're not pleased with this Band-Aid fix. And the next time that it comes before us, if I tend to be agency head, I will be taking a good hard look at the evaluation that comes out to ensure that somewhere along the way has done something to move toward what our advisors recommend, because they're the folks that we rely upon to do that. That's not in any way a threat. It's hopefully a prod or maybe something you can convey that this can't be the status quo time and time again, because we do have other constituents that are concerned that we have to, under the public trust doctrine, listen to as well, because every decision we make here is based on a public trust doctrine. Certainly this is very important, but other things are as well, and we have to find a balance. So with that, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. We'll break for lunch. We'll be back in here. What time, guys? Do it about 1:45? 1:45.